What's your why?
So I'm super excited.
Well, thank you for having me.
Welcome to Nabor Talks.
Very important topic.
That's very hard to follow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Nabor Talks. I am Danielle Hudson, Vice President of Public Policy, and we have a great show lined up for you today. I have with me as my guest Keith Brady, and he is from the attorney's office that worked on most recent Marco Island short-term vacation rental case. And so this is going to be a really interesting conversation. And I just know we're going to learn a whole bunch from Keith, not only about the case, but also about where we are with short-term vacation rental policy more broadly. So good morning, Keith. How are you?
Good morning. Well, good to be here.
So let's kick off by you introducing yourself and letting our audience know a little bit about you and your work.
Okay. Well, I'm Keith Brady. My law firm's Florida Vacation Rental Law. And as the name implies, that's all I do, and that's all I've ever done is vacation rental law. My son is a civil litigator, so he handles most of the litigation. I work more with contracts and compliance. The one area of litigation I do get involved with is when it's litigation involving a local government. I will add that my daughter is engaged, and she's a studio musician. She's a violinist, and she also performs local for, you know, museum grand openings and such like that. So I'm very proud of my children.
That's amazing. So let's jump into the meat of it then, talking about the most recent case in Marco Island. And this was one of particular interest for our board, not only because Marco Island is our neighbor, but also because Florida Realtors engaged on this particular lawsuit, which doesn't always happen. And so talk to us about the case and what were the facts of the case?
Okay, well, let's start with a little legal nuance. Legally speaking, and attorney speak, there are no facts of the case. This is what's called a summary judgment case, meaning it's a pure matter of law, meaning there's no argument he said, she said, over exactly what happened and who's to blame. It's a pure question of law. Can Marco Island pass an ordinance to regulate vacation rentals? And the answer is no. There's a statute, and I'll give you the specific citation, 509.0327A. And word for word, if I use the ellipse or the dot, 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 it's regulation, dot, 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 is preempted to the state. So it's six words. Now, I'm not paraphrasing or giving my interpretation. Word for word, regulation is preempted to the state. I'm skipping the part of regulation of transient lodging and vacation rentals and here forth and there under, but regulations preempted to the state. So the facts of the case, so to speak, are that they cannot regulate in the manner that they attempted to because the state law prohibits them from doing so.
Okay. And so what from your perspective then was different between the ordinance that was passed in Marco in comparison to other ordinances that have been passed around the state? Because there have been quite a few of them. So what made right. this ordinance so hotly contested?
That it was 48 pages long instead of three would be a lot more common too, but it was 48 pages of regulations. You have to have somebody manning a phone 24/7, and you can get in legal trouble if they ever call you and you don't answer. There were so many penalties and regulations and definitions, and they wanted to regulate everything. You cannot put your trash out to the road until 6 p.m. at night. It must be back in, but parking, trash, occupancy, they made up their own fire code which of course you can't do. There's a fire code, a state fire code already. So what made it so different was the magnitude of the regulation, because what I do for a living is whenever I have a new client, I explain to them regulations preempted to the state, but we'll almost always follow the local regulations and skip the part where we tell them that you can't do it or we'll sue you, as long as they're manageable, as long as they're not going to drive us out of business, then we don't care whether they have the right to do it or not. We want to turn the other cheek, so to speak. So being a little redundant, but what was so different is that this one we couldn't live with. It would have driven us out of business. It was 48 pages of regulations.
Now, I'm going to ask kind of an off-the-cuff question. The regulations would have only pertained then to homes that were being rented and not for all homes across the Marco Island, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's what makes it so different too, is that there's responsible ways to regulate. And in over 90%, now it's a high number, 90%, and it's actually higher than that, of the local governments I work with, we make friends, we have coffee, we work together, it's cooperative. And the reason why is that, with all due respect, I know how to regulate more effectively than they do, because it's all I've ever done, it's all I do. I'll give you a little bit of a long answer on that, but when I enter the picture, the earlier I enter, the better. Mm-hmm. Because you have entrenchment, you have these responsible owners, and all they know is what they believe is everybody is like them. Everybody has their license, is paying their taxes, is doing background checks, has Ring doorbell cameras, you know, everything. Nothing can go wrong. It's run with hotel standards, as it should be, by the way. It should be run with hotel standards. And then you have the city, and they know about the party over here, the parking over there, and there's always going to be a bad example or two. And by the way, not 10. I've never had a case where there was 10. Marco Island has not had 10. I don't believe they've ever even had 5.
Yeah, that's been our experience too. When we've asked for public records on, you know, the bad actors, it's only usually like one or two homes in the entire community.
Yeah, it's I've never had 10. And so they only see one side of it. Everybody is bad. My clients will see everybody's good. And I try to be a voice of reason, of moderation. And I recognize the city's need to regulate. By the way, and I don't consider this wrong, but if only for political reasons, when you have all of the retirees that want this regulated and they want things done properly and they have concerns, you work for the people. Right. And so let's do something. Let's satisfy what all of these people want. And a lot of people in Marco Island wanted to see the city do something about it. I was going to say a majority. There's a interesting distinction there. A majority of, not the homeowners, a minority of the homeowners wanted to see them do something. A majority of the year-round residents. And they're the only ones that get to vote.
Right.
Are the ones that are homesteaded.
I seem to remember, though, at the start of the conversation in Marco Island, just as a sidebar, that the conversation really centered on more of a registration program. And that was right around the time that Clark County had passed their registration program, because there was this big push in Marco for the homeowners that were there year round to understand where the places were, who was being rented. And then from there, it kind of just went sideways, at least from a person that was involved in it, just just watching it from the public testimony side.
It did. The genesis of the case was when you want to have just a registration program, the courts have decided in a case called 30 Cinnamon Beach that as sure as you can do 30 and 40 and a 35, we'll let you get a registration so you know where everybody is, as long as it's nothing that can be suspended or revoked, and that it's a nominal fee. There's actually a statute called the exaction statute that says you can't make a profit off of it. So if you want to charge $10 or $30, it's actually part of the Burt Harris Act. That, you know, you can do this, you can't profit off of it, but you can't regulate. You could never suspend it. That would be the key point. You could never deny approval. You could never suspend it, but you do have a right to know who's doing what. That's 30 Cinnamon Beach, Judge Orfinger. And we thought that was fair. Now, he didn't say like doing 40 and a 35, but that's what I interpreted to him to mean. And I didn't argue about that. I don't argue about that.
So we're going to get to where you see maybe the legislature taking this. And I have a question that pertains to something that you just mentioned when we get there. But first, let's talk about where we are with the Marco case.
Okay. So the Marco case is brain dead. They lost.
It's a double entendre there, maybe.
Yeah. And not the Marco Island government. I wouldn't say that. The case, meaning that technically it's active, but there's no way for it to move forward. And I'll explain. And then if we have time, I can go back and tell you how they could have, where it went awry with the city attorney, who's a very good man. And I've never heard anybody ever say otherwise. He and I were always in agreement.
Very sensible.
Very sensible. And I can tell you where that went awry and what they could have done, which would have actually regulated more effectively with no lawsuit. But your question again was...
Where are we now? So you're saying it's basically okay. Dead on arrival. So can't move
the attorney that was hired to defend the city against me has on his resume, on his business card, senior partner in charge of litigation strategy. So in comes the big gun, and he's going to be the guy that can win the case, because the city attorney told him you can't win the case. Six words, regulations preempted to the state. But generally you can find an attorney to say that he'll take the case and offer some optimism. And that's what happened here. But not much longer after that, he conceded he couldn't win the case. And he made that a matter of public record. That's a matter of public record. And just to let you know, it's not an opinion. It's an attorney speaks on behalf of the client. So it's the same as the city saying, when we now have two attorneys saying the case can't be won. And so we, on the day of the first day we were to go before the judge, matters before it in a, I don't want to say a mad scramble, but certainly in a rush, we filed paperwork with the judge that we agreed on that said the city, attests in a legal court document that it will never enforce this ordinance. So now it's a matter of court record. Now, there is paperwork to be done, which is the dismissal. The motion to dismiss with prejudice would be the legal title of that document. But there's a disagreement on that because I'm due my attorney's fees because I won. By the way, the other three cases aren't. There were four cases. The other three never got out of the starting blocks because of snafus. The problem was with my case and my focus on those six words. So to be clear, the other people weren't involved in this and they didn't obtain the confession or file the paperwork. That's with all due respect, that was all me. So as far as them filing the paperwork for a final dismissal, that hasn't been done, but there's no going back. The city's actually either had a resolution or at the very least a binding public statement that this is unenforceable, we can't enforce it. I think they're gonna come back and try to pass something else again. I keep using the phrase with all due respect, but it defies logic. Regulations preempted to the state, and it's almost like a comedy show. Well, how about if it's just 33 pages of regulation? No, still can't do it. Well, then we'll just do 10 pages. No, you still can't do it. So they do have some plans to pass another regulation.
So I guess what I'm hearing is that we haven't seen the last of a regulatory ordinance. Now, you mentioned, if we had time, you'll tell us how you think they could have gone about it differently. Let's go there. What, from your professional opinion, what could Marco have done differently that maybe would have landed them in success as opposed to defeat?
Okay, a little background. I had the honor of being chosen by a Florida Bar Committee to provide training to city and county attorneys. And that was just like real estate agents and brokers, attorneys have CLEs, continuing legal education. And I had the honor, along with a dear colleague of mine, John Greco, he's the city attorney for Miami. And we jointly presented what you can do and can't do. Following that, I had the honor of being funded by nonprofits to draft the model ordinance for city and county attorneys to use. That's a template with instructions that walks them through. And the hard part about it is that had the city accepted my teaching through the Florida Bar and my funded model ordinance, then it would have showed them how they could regulate. And that's what happens 90% of the time. It's very unusual for it to be adversarial like this. The city attorney and I both told them the same thing, that this is the way forward, cooperatively. So just to give you an example, we can pass regulations for parking, noise, trash, that apply to all forms of occupancy, owner, right, long-term, short-term, and that's completely fair. What's not fair is that you can leave your trash cans out, but a managed property where it's harder to do, the cleaners aren't allowed to put it out at 4 p.m. They have to go on to the next houses and come out and put it at 6. And you can go to work in the morning and bring them back in at 5, but not them. If they do that, they're going to permanently lose their right to rent. Mm-hmm. And it's like, good God, that would be, it's just impractical to add all these layers of, now I need an employee for, you know, to go back just for trash duties. So we had a cure for that, you know? And another one is that wanting to add occupancy limits, which you're not allowed to do. They're set by the state fire marshal. And by the way, we have our own fire code. Vacation, it's very developed. Vacation rentals has a fire code that doesn't apply to any other form of occupancy. And when you say, we're gonna limit the occupancy because that's going to quell parties, it actually doesn't, not only doesn't work well, and I'll make this my one story because this is actually the best example I have. Sure. Not only does it not help much, it doesn't help at all. And you can ask the Northeast Florida Board of Realtors and all, and you can ask the hotel division of the DBPR. There has never been an incident where somebody said, turn the music down because I was reading the contract. And in, and in paragraph Roman numeral 15, it speaks about an occupancy limit. What does work is that I had the honor of working with several nonprofits to develop a law enforcement policy for removals and breaking up of parties. And some counties and cities are completely on board. Give you an example, Lee County. In Lee County, if you call and say they're having a party, now, if they say you're having a party, Danielle, they come and they tell you to turn the noise down and they come back an hour later. And if it's still a problem, they wait there as long as it takes for the party to break up, except for the people spending the night. That's the policy for you. But for vacation rentals, the policy is knock, knock, out, you all go with no warning. And when they say, oh, no, no, not us. We actually paid to rent it. Guess again, out the door you go. So in perhaps 20 minutes from a neighbor calling, the lights are out and the house is vacant for the week. So when I say it's all a great disappointment, had they taken the cooperative approach that over 90% do, we would have stopped the party problem. Now, by the way, I pretend to be diplomatic. There's a party problem. There's not a party problem. It's people in cardigan sweaters that are down here to golf and to eat and to enjoy fine dining. So, but what they said instead, and you can quote me on this, they told the city attorney Allen, and they told me, you don't know what you're talking about.
Interesting.
That might be word for word. You don't know what you're talking about. And I thought, oh, good God, this is all a shame. It doesn't happen often.
That's interesting. All right, so you have the benefit of seeing these ordinances and different policies being put in place at the local level all across the state. So what do you think the future is of this discussion? You know, I've been watching the news as it relates to Airbnb and their stock and all of that. And yeah. I know they're often kind of on the hook when these types of discussions come up. So where do you think we go from here across the state of Florida? Do we have a short-term vacation rental problem? Do you, now that it's regulated by the state, we just sort of have this patchwork of regulations that are going to be put into place, but the majority of them being sensible? Or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Let me give you a little context. You know, I always felt that where I'll tell you where I wish it was going.
Okay. Yeah.
Where I wish where it was going is that people viewed vacation rentals the way they viewed the Everglades. Mm. This is something precious that needs to be protected. It's mind boggling that something as important as vacation rentals to Florida. This is $1 billion a week profession. If we don't protect it, the impact it would have on the environment, I mean, on the economy would be remarkable. A large percentage of real estate agents and a large percentage of cleaning companies would be so adversely impacted. Did nobody says about the Everglades, yeah, but there's alligators. I know, but notwithstanding the alligators, we still want to protect it. Right. Well, you know how many people have died in the Everglades? I had a friend, Kyle, who got severely hurt in the Everglades when his boat broke down. Mm-hmm. There's people lost. There's all kinds of dangers, all kinds of problems. Now there's invasive species. Mm-hmm. So if we took the attitude of just focusing in on the negative, we would pave the Everglades tomorrow. If the people that are against vacation rentals applied the same logic to the Everglades, we would pave it tomorrow. We have to protect our profession because it is not one of the top 10 important parts of the economy in Florida. It's an anchor. It's foundational to our economy. It's who we are. So that's what I wish we would understand, is there's a need to protect it. The where we're really going is that since 2014, for 9.5 years, people have advocated for legislation that would have a devastating effect on vacation rentals, including right now there's legislation that says this: if they see a trash can on the road and they wait 5 days to tell you, you lose your right forever to rent.
Okay.
And that's typical. Now, it's not worded that way because it's lawyers. It says it must be 5 separate incidences. So if somebody just keeps breaking a rule over and over and over, what they don't tell you in the fine print, each day is a separate incident.
Gotcha.
So it's all tricky lawyering. Now, none of that's passed for 9.5 years, but it's a constant presentation. They're well organized. They're well funded by the hoteliers. And I'm thinking in Tallahassee, would you guys let the orange lobby badmouth the grapefruit lobby to get rid of all of them? What are you doing? Especially now that grapefruits are as big as oranges. Vacation rentals are as big as hotels. We're talking about getting rid of, that's part of the deceit, is if we passed a law and we were trying to get rid of hotels, people would realize, get rid of hotels in Florida, that's crazy. But what we're doing is just as bad. So pardon my halting speech, I'm thinking out loud. My point before I move on is simply, I wish people would appreciate that we don't need to go against war against the people in the cardigan sweaters coming down to spend $10,000 filling our restaurants and making us all prosperous. We don't need to go to war against them. But where we are going is apparently in a perpetual battle to try to pass legislation that would cut the profession from $50 billion a year to $25 billion a year, because it would start with the right of local governments to get rid of vacation rentals. That's where we're going, is to have that constant battle. Now, I could switch back back towards, well, what are responsible regulations? Now, earlier in my career, I'd be so bold to say that I was the first voice I knew of on behalf of the vacation rentals that took a very pro-regulation stance. Now, that's the norm now. The regulatory nonprofits and all are all very pro-regulation. So I've personally spoken with and worked with the Department of Children and Families and with the Florida Department of Health. And there's people doing more work than me, namely at the Florida Alliance of Vacation Rentals, to get even funding for printing for drowning awareness.
Right.
So, they're, and in the last 3 years with cooperative effects, we're now doing background checks on employees. We're now training employees to identify human trafficking. We have balcony inspections. We have smoke detectors for the hearing impaired. And if I stop right there, background checks, human traffic awareness training, balcony inspections, taking care of the hearing impaired, you get an idea that we are, in favor of strong regulations. It's just that the regulations should be what's good for all of us like sheriff's departments being trained to throw them out instead of telling the other 99 vacation rentals that you can only have six people in your 3,400 square foot stilt home because it's three bedrooms. It's like, really? Just six people? So we just need regulations that are the right regulations. Nobody is advocating for to be less regulated. They're just advocating to have the right regulations.
That's a good point. I also find it interesting that you mentioned the hoteliers being some of the fiercest lobbyists against short-term vacation rentals. And I find it ironic because, you know, now some hotels are actually getting into the short-term vacation rental business, which is fascinating. So I suspect maybe the conversation will take on a little bit of a different tone. But let's go there to this upcoming legislative session. What are your predictions?
Yeah.
Is this the year that the state passes something, or are we going to be locked in that same cycle of they talk about it, but we don't really get anywhere with it?
Well, they have passed some things, and I just listed four of them.
Yes, sir.
And there's other things they've passed to give us attorney's fees when we defeat a city in litigation. And there's other protections. Burt Harris, most people are familiar with and all. And that's been amended and updated to include protection for when it doesn't hurt the property value, but it hurts the business income. That's exaction rather than Burt Harris. So there's a lot of things that are passed. What will pass this year? It's no telling. The officials are elected to pass legislation, and you don't get reelected if you don't pass legislation. So it's for that reason things tend to get passed. You know, they passed a recent one that affected just platforms, and you know, they're always passing something. So what they're going to pass this year, I don't know. I know what they're trying to pass. And what they're trying to pass is something that would allow cities that want to, like Marco Island, to get rid of most, if not all, vacation rentals. So the fight is on. And by fight, I mean the lobbying is on. People going to Tallahassee and walking around the Carters and talking to the elected officials and saying, please don't do this.
Well, we will be doing that in January 9th at the start of legislative session. Short-term vacation rentals are near and dear to our heart here in Naples. We would certainly be advocating against any regulation that would allow a city to get rid of them, which is part of the reason why we took such an interest in what was going on in Marco, because our city understands that they can't regulate. Currently, they have a grandfather clause that allows them to operate the way that they have since 2011. But if they could, I am sure they would put more regulation or completely eliminate them. So this is something that we're certainly monitoring. All right, Mr. Keith, last words, final thoughts from you.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, I guess the final words are that you know, I think we do well when we all seek cooperation. We all seek regulation that we can live with, but that we need to get rid of the decade-old attack on this valuable profession and all the myths that go along with it, that there's big parties and there's, you know, this and that. It's just not true. We're talking about, for the most part, executive accommodations and old people, not young people, that are very responsible renters. So my final word is that let's hope for the best and let's politely advocate. Let's never argue. Let's never tell anybody that here's how I think you should do your job, but just ask them to please consider our side of the story. That's all.
Well, thank you, Mr. Keith Brady, for coming on Neighbor Talks today. I greatly appreciate your expertise and all of the work you're doing in the short-term vacation rental space.
All right. Thank you. All right. Bye.